As women, we all know what it's like to be on a hormonal roller coaster. I certainly know personally what it's like, cravings, ups and downs, all the things that come along with it and being a woman. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier by creating supplements with science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Adaptogens help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. This isn't just for women going through things like menopause. Women with symptoms, any symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it. But it's perfect for those horrible menopausal symptoms that can put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes, night sweats, low mood, poor sleep, or the feeling of just being tired all the time. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is literally sold like every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off the entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code LIVINGFULLY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code LIVINGFULLY for 15% off today. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. Right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off the first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoirestyle/livingfully. That's armoirestyle, armoirestyle/livingfully to get up to 50% off your first month and never have to worry about what to wear again. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz. And with plans starting at $69 a month, members have access to a rotating closet of 75,000 items by hundreds of top designers. Personalized closet. The styles show up to your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. We all know the feeling. You open your closet, it's full, but you have quite literally nothing to wear. Armoire will help all of us never to feel this way again. They allow you to rent high-quality designer clothes for every single occasion. Did I mention that Armoire is also women-founded and women-led? They even spotlight women-owned designers on the website. I love that I can support a business that's built by women like me. Try Armoire today. Are you ready to start living your best life today? Hey y'all, I'm Mallory and welcome to the Living Fully podcast. I'm a wife, mom, and entrepreneur here to encourage you toward a life of joy and fulfillment. My heart of big dreams took me a long way from growing up on a farm in Kentucky, from Miss America and the Amazing Race, all the way to writing a best-selling book and creating 2 multi-million dollar merchandise lines. Through this crazy journey, I've had a lot of highs and some lows, but I found my true self along the way. So now my hope is to motivate you to find your own version of living fully. Here, we believe you have a choice in your legacy. So let's start living it out today. I'm Mallory, and this is the Living Fully podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Living Fully podcast. I'm so excited today to have another conversation with my dad, Gary. He is one of everybody's favorite guests that comes on the podcast, and we like to talk about a bunch of fun things like mountain climbing and life, and we would be amiss if we didn't talk about a major life shift for us and someone who was truly like the ultimate definition of living fully on the Living Fully podcast, and that was my grandpa, Papa Bud, who was my dad's dad, who passed away in December. And he was truly the most dynamic person that I've ever met in my life. And he was just so full of wisdom and life, the way that he experienced adversity and just lived life with pure joy, the way he told stories, the way that he was like the ultimate entrepreneur. There are just so many things that I feel like you could pull from his life that are lessons in what it means to live a full life. So my dad and I wanted to reflect on that today and just kind of talk a little bit about my grandpa, about losing him, but also about this commitment that we have as the oldest. I'm the oldest of all my siblings. He's the oldest of all his siblings. My grandpa was the oldest. This commitment to sharing our family's legacy, which is my grandpa's legacy, with anybody that we can. So we're really excited to do this podcast for you guys today. We hope we can get through it. But like we keep saying, we really want to show the joy on the other side of losing him, because that's what he always showed in his life, was just joy on the other side of adversity. So here we go. All right. So my dad and I are here on the podcast again to have another conversation about something that may not be as easy to talk about as the mountains were. And it's still, you know, something that's very fresh on our minds because it's just happened. But it's the loss of my grandpa, Bud, and his dad. And why we want to do a podcast on this is there's a lot of reasons, but we're big about sharing our family legacy, and we think that sharing stories are so powerful, and especially when you have a family member who was so otherworldly and made such an incredible impact on so many people's lives, just taking this opportunity to share, like, some of those things that he taught us and reflections on just this incredible way to live that we feel like he passed on to us. We'll talk about this in the podcast, but like my grandpa was the oldest child. My dad's the oldest child. I'm the oldest child. And sometimes we talk about this like it's a great thing being the oldest child, but you do feel a lot of responsibility to make sure that like your family stories get told and your legacy gets passed on. So, you know, my dad was like, I don't know, I'm nervous about to talk about this, but it's time. And I was like, I know, like it's never easy talking about it, but like every time I talk about him, like I just, it brings me so much joy at the same time because he was just the best person I ever knew in my life.
And you know, the conversation that you had on the presentation and, it was funny. I missed it. I was in Africa when you talked on
the keynote talk,
and it was about Grandpa, which was kind of a surprise. We didn't know that was what it was going to be about mm-hmm. until after you did it. And I was on my way back, and it was the first time I got to New York and was able to get to a internet Wi-Fi, and I listened to it, and I said, you know, if we're going to talk about Dad, we've got to do him justice. We got to talk about the good and the bad, and kind of the way you did and the message you delivered on that podcast. And so that puts a lot of pressure on us to step up and tell a story.
Yeah. But I know he'll be with us while we're telling this story about him, but he wouldn't have wanted us to talk about him. So maybe he won't be with us.
Yeah. Well, it's just like
such a humble, awesome guy.
Like, it's like somebody posted the other day. It was Blaze's birthday, and they said, and Dad and Blaze and Uncle Dick are the only three in the graveyard right now.
Oh, Lord.
So Blaze and Grandpa are sitting there together, and Uncle Dick's probably got a Bloody Mary and having a heck of a time.
That was my grandma's brother. He was the first person in our family graveyard because my dad and Pawpaw had this idea to do a family graveyard. So you don't really get a choice of where you're buried. Kyle was like, well, what happens if something happens to us? And I was like, well, you'd be buried on my one side with all our children. And then my other husband would be buried. Oh, just kidding. Mm. But that's it's funny to think about.
But that's a project that Dad, you know, he loved projects like that. And that family graveyard was so important to him.
And family,
it was important to him. He wanted the family to be together in life and in death. And that, mm-hmm. that graveyard kind of was part of that. And he, you know, even from like the quarry that we got the marble out was Michelangelo's quarry and the mm-hmm. Carrera quarry and you know every aspect of that graveyard was designed 15-20 years ago and it's laid there empty until just here recently but that was one of his projects, one of his many projects that he drugged me into.
One of his many projects, yep. And I like what you just said. He wanted, family was just the ultimate, the thing that was the most important to him. And he wanted us to live well together, and then he wanted us to be buried next to each other. He just wanted us together, in life and in death. And it's like, gosh, you know, we talk a lot about living fully and living on this podcast. We don't talk about the other side of things, which is, you know, when you lose someone that was such a, you know, huge part of your life. But this is part of life, and it's part of living a beautiful life. And the way that he lived was pretty incredible, but also the way that he went out was pretty incredible too. So if you guys, like, I'll just give you a little bit of a background on, like, how we kind of grew up from my point of view. So we grew up on this farm with all of our cousins. So there's 23 first cousins kind of all spread around this farm. My grandparents are in the center. My aunts and uncles are kind of, like, dispersed around this farm. And, you know, we grew up in this really amazing way, just being these country kids. And, you know, my grandpa was just this incredible figure and, like, person that was kind of right in the middle of this setting. And he was just, like, the best grandpa ever. So, you know, my dad is also a really great grandpa. And if you guys listen to the podcast that we did on the mountains, he talks a lot about, like, his lessons to his grandkids. My dad was really intentional and being like, I'm going to climb these mountains and I'm going to write these lessons to our grandkids. How our grandpa, like, passed on lessons to us was a little bit different. I feel like he told us a lot of stories. I feel like he drug us alongside of him to do the most, like, crazy, random, amazing, cool things.
And he was a storyteller, and that's,
yeah.
You know, I wanted to write down messages. He did it by telling stories, and sometimes the stories change quite a bit. So I don't know if he just remembered different parts of them, or if he just needed to twist it in a different direction to leave us a message in there. So, but that's, and we can all remember these stories, you know, I know you'll get into the project, but, those stories are so valuable, and they're in our memories, and it's stuff that we need to talk about. And that's how we keep him in our conversations, and how we keep him, present. By telling and retelling his stories.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, these are some stories that I wasn't as privy to. I heard the kind of second version of these stories, but it was later in life that I learned about how he grew up. You know, I always knew that he was just this incredible person that lived life so richly. But, you know, there's always a story underneath that for anybody that lives like that. And, I mean, his story was just so wild. And so, like, you know, the way that he grew up, and I'll let you tell a little bit of that story. What's so inspirational to me, and I say it all the time, and I wrote it in my book, and I think it's really important to think about this generation because they're almost gone. In my book, I wrote a chapter called Endangered Species because I feel like they're like that. It's like this generation that lived through the Great Depression and, like, the world wars, and, you know, they're not going to be here for much longer. So, like, at the end of this podcast, as we talk about our, you know, the legend on earth that was my grandpa, I want to encourage you guys to do these little projects with the people that you love, like we did with my grandpa, to kind of capture your family legacy, because once they're gone, like, you don't want it to go with them. Like, you want to be able to capture that. That was such a gift that we were able to capture that. But describe a little bit about how Papa grew up. Like,
you know, it sounds crazy, but Dad was, we say he's the oldest. He was the second oldest. His sister was 11 months older. He was the second oldest when his mom had him. She was 15. She was married at the age of 13. You said you can't believe that back then that's the way it was.
Yeah,
pre-depression.
It's wild.
Sister died when she was 11. Dad was 10, riding a bicycle to school with him on the back of it. Mm-hmm. They got hit by a car, and she died from the accident. Dad, out of the five of them, I think three of them died of diseases or accidents at a very young age. You know, when he was 13, he had smallpox or chicken pox, and he lost his right eye. And he was blind from 13 years old on. And he became a boxer, and it's a funny story. He was an undefeated Golden Gloves boxer, and he he decided he was going to make a living as a professional boxer. And his mom wrote a letter to the boxing commission because you couldn't tell he was blind in his right eye. And he ended up getting drafted and going to the military with one eye. His mom wrote a letter to the boxing commission saying he was blind in one eye.
Because she didn't want him to box.
He never got his professional boxing license. So that was one of the stories he told. He said, I was mad at my mom at the time for doing that. But boxers back in these days would end up with, there was no rules around it.
And they would fight. Could have ended up all the way blind.
Until they were crippled. But that's just one of many stories. But that was his childhood. His dad died when he was 16. He raised his siblings from the age of 16 on. He was the oldest male in the house. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, his mom, worked at hauling hay. So she had a hay crew that she used to drive a truck, and they would haul hay. Dad delivered coal, and he drove a coal truck since he was 13 years old, mm-hmm. with one eye and a load of coal that he would deliver to houses. And that's what they heated with. So he had kind of a rough childhood, a lot of tragedy. But that's kind of maybe what made him so strong on raising a family and having us together in life and in death. Mm-hmm. So, because he saw both sides of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the strength of our family kind of was passed down from mm-hmm. his lessons.
Yeah. And what a juxtaposition to the way that so many people, feel around, you know, instead of saying, well, woe is me, and I lost all my family. Like, you know, I'm definitely not putting all my eggs in this basket again. He did the total opposite of that. And he became obsessed with family and keeping our families together. When my dad and I were talking about this episode, I was like, did he ever get mad? And my dad said, only when we would like go against our siblings. That's like the angriest that he got. Like,
yeah.
You know, cause he was just, you know, I can just remember it even as kids, like, you know, us cousins, like, they liked it when the cousins hung out together. They didn't always like it when, like, an outlier friend would come along. They, like, wouldn't even say their first name. They'd be like, well, you got that Thomas girl, like, coming around? You know, where's Max? You know, it's just, you know, they, of course, supported us, like, having other people in the community. But it was definitely second to our family. And I think that that's kind of why our family is just, like, so tight-knit and so close. But, like, You talking about this and all that he went through, it's the thing that I admire most about him is his pure joy. Like the way that he lived, he was so joyful. He was always smiling and always laughing. You guys have seen this clip. I'm going to pull this clip. You can watch some special clips of my grandpa in the YouTube video if you're listening to this on audio. But, you know, we did this family project where we asked my grandparents all these questions. And one random question that we asked him was, what makes you smile? And he just said, well, it don't take a lot to make me smile, like a big fish or a big deal or a, you know, it don't take a lot to make me smile. And that was just so true. He was so full of joy and full of life. And yet he had the hardest life that he could have just been so crass and closed off to life. And he was just the opposite. Like he experienced so much adversity, but it made him who he was. And it's just such an incredible example. Anytime I'm going through adversity, I always think of him. And I always think about, I just love him so much. And especially at the end of his life, and you just hear more and more about what he went through. And I used to be like, gosh, I wish I could go back and just erase it for him. Because you just hate for somebody you love that much to experience like anything hard. But it was what made him who he was.
That's where he got his joy from. He's been through painful things, but little things made him happy. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, and the porters in Africa. They didn't make a lot of money. They worked hard, but they had joy. And Dad was kind of that way.
Yeah, for sure. So there's six kids in my dad's family, and he's the oldest. They lived in Louisiana when my dad was younger, and my grandpa was kind of a jack of all trades. And he was such a worker. So back then in Louisiana, you guys growing up, tell me a little bit about like what he did back then. So that's when he started. That was his first like soiree into the grocery store business,
yeah,
right?
And even before that, it was a funny story how he and mom met. And, you know, he was 21. The story about him getting drafted is just bizarre. He said he showed up, it was a warm day in December, in a T-shirt to the draft board. And he said he figured it'd be 5 minutes. And they gave him the eye test. And he says, I'm blind in my right eye, and they'll send me home. And he said they went through the eye test. He said, I'm blind in my right eye. And they said, get on the bus. And he said, what do you mean? He said, well, tell that one-armed guy we put on the bus earlier that you're blind in one eye and you can't go to the Army. And so he said that night he got off the bus in Detroit, and he said it was in a snowstorm. And he said, all I had was a T-shirt.
Oh, my God.
And he said it was 3 days before they let me call home to tell my mom that I got drafted. And, you know, she first thing she said, you've only got one eye. And he said, yeah, that's what I told him. And he ended up going to the military. And him and my mom were dating at the time. She was a switchboard operator, and he tells funny stories about he couldn't call his other girlfriends because she knew when he was calling them from the switchboard. But she made her mom promise that she would go to school after high school, and she wouldn't get married until she turned 20. So 1 month after she turned 20, Dad was stationed in Bad Kreuznach, Germany. She flew to Germany, and they got married. Mm-hmm. A year later, I came along in mm-hmm. Bad Kreuznach, Germany. So that's where I was born, but that's what started his family and their life together mm-hmm. is a commitment that they made when they were young, that they followed through with when he started his career in the Army. He served his years, and we moved to Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And in Louisiana, it was just a hodgepodge. He started out working in the oil fields, and he said, you know, he wasn't cut out for, you know, standing in these ditches and with snakes and everything else that crawled in and out of these ditches with him. So he started out as a grocery rep and then ended up buying a bunch of little community grocery stores mm-hmm. and worked hard. He learned a lot of skills. He was a butcher when we lived in Lafayette, Louisiana. He was Franklin, Louisiana is when he bought his first grocery store. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. It's probably one of my first memories of him working. And this grocery store was right down the road from a trailer that we lived in. Mm-hmm. So I just remember that. And I remember as a kid bagging onions and watching him work in the butcher shop in this little grocery store. So that was kind of the first part of that. And we moved back to Kentucky when I was in the third grade. Mm-hmm. And it was just every year there'd be a different direction. So he was always flexible. He was always a hustler.
He was.
So that's kind of what brought us to Louisiana and then eventually back to Kentucky.
Yeah. And he was so like one thing to the next. Like, and you know, I think that we'll talk about your similarities and differences in a second, but like he was very entrepreneurial and very like all in, all the chips on the table. We're going to go all in on farming or mobile home selling or like buying this land and like, you know, clearing it out and putting houses on it. Like there were just all of these things that he did. And you said that, you know, I said, what's one thing that you learned back then? Like when you were working alongside of him kind of, and you were like, I learned that I could never be a farmer because there were so many things out of his control that like ruined your family over and over kind of financially, mm-hmm. like as the hog farms would fail or whatever, you know, and he would kind of pick himself up and he always found a way. But,
yeah, he wasn't. He always said I've been broke three times, and all three times were while I was a farmer.
Yeah,
and you know it was, and I kind of lived the last time was in 1974. I was a junior in high school, and I kind of lived that. 1974 was a terrible time financially, and mm-hmm. grain prices were terrible. There were diseases with our hog floors. We were leveraged. Interest rates were crazy. So, you know, but, you know, like anything else, he kind of laughed about it. And those are lessons that I learned through watching him. And I was probably old enough and yet young enough to take on that. But like everything else, he would always find the next thing to move to. He yeah. always found a way to support his family.
Yeah, he did.
To change the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you feel like there's probably more similarities than differences, but how do you feel like in your life being his oldest son, like how do you feel like you're similar to him?
You know, he was a risk taker. And you know, he would take risk on a gut feel on, like when we moved, he bought the Army base that we moved to. And then the farm we bought was a bomb range that had to be cleared. And he cleared it with his kids and himself.
Which is so wild back in the day that like everybody's so careful with kids yeah. nowadays. And like he was letting y'all pick up bombs that could have probably gone off at any time if one of them had not been detonated.
Yeah, they were live rounds, many live
that
rounds.
That's crazy.
But he took risk. I took risk. You know, I guess I've had the benefit of some of the mistakes that he made. He made it usually at a family table. We said, well, I probably messed up here. And you know, I learned from those mistakes. And like I said, farming, things you can't control. In 1980, when we started the communication business, interest rates went up to 16%. And that mm-hmm. was just, we were caught in the fate of the economy. Luckily, we were in the right place in the right industry. But things you can't control, like farming, you couldn't control the disease. You couldn't control
commodity prices,
the price of corn. You couldn't control
the weather.
Yeah, there were so many things. And that's, you know, he grew up farming. He loved farming. He still, the day he died, the September, when they picked the corn crops, he got on the bush hog and he cleared 600 acres of field edges yeah. with a bush hog. So,
yeah.
So he loved being on a farm and,
yeah.
And I love being saying I'm a farmer, but, there's way too much risk
yeah.
in that. So,
yeah. But he also too, like as you guys were trying to figure out what your career path would be, he loved what you guys were into. Like he kind of helped you guys. What tell us about like how, so we have a family business, or my dad has a family business that all my brothers and a lot of the boy cousins work in, all my uncles, that is like, it's in the tech world. So it's like cable TV construction, and then fiber optics and building out all these networks and stuff like that. It's broader than that, but he was reading the newspaper and he saw something about like a cable system that needed to be built or something.
Yeah, the franchise for the cable TV system in our hometown. And you know, it's just he bought this Army base, he bought, had an officers club. And officers club, when he was 12 or 13 years old, he made money by shining officers' shoes mm-hmm. at the officers club. So he remembered this building, and when he bought the Army base, that officers club came along with it. And with that officers club had a great big tower, and he says, we got a tower, and what else do we need to be a cable TV operator? And little did we know there was a lot more to it, but that was kind of an instinctive thing he had mm-hmm. That kind of launched us into the cable TV business and into multiple careers in owning and operating cable systems and fiber optic networks and then being one of the biggest telecommunication companies in the country right now, developed from that one tower in the back of the officers club.
Yeah, and because you couldn't get a job in the coal mines
yeah,
that summer,
and
right?
They paneled. I shot dynamite in the coal mines underground, and I couldn't get my job back when I got out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And cable TV lineman work was the only thing I could get. So
yeah.
It was.
What a bet, though.
It was more luck than skill.
Yeah. That's just so amazing, though. And it's so cool that, like, he began that with you guys. But he was the ultimate risk taker. And he seems like he was always all in, which meant he failed a lot. But he just always, like, through every failure, he just picked himself back up and he would just keep going and keep going and keep going. And I love hearing all these stories about him and, like, sharing these stories because it's just like he just lived such a rich life. But I think it's because of that. It's because of his hard times and his failures and, you know, all of these things that we're talking about. Okay, so here is my reflection on my grandpa. As A, he's the best person that I've ever met in my entire life. He is a person that every single one of the grandkids of us 23 would say the same thing. Whenever we'd come home from like college or like bring a friend home, you couldn't wait to bring them to like Papa's house because you knew he was going to make them eat something or drink something or like go on some ride on something or, you know, he just like, as soon as someone would walk into the door, he'd welcome them. And he was just like so proud that he was your grandpa because he made whoever you brought through that door feel just like he'd made all us feel like super special. And like, he was just, you know, amazing the way that he was like when you'd walk into his home. And I feel like, you know, this was during his funeral when he passed away in December and we were all like talking about him. And I was talking to my Aunt Laura about him and she said, you know, something that I always remember about him is when, you know, my dad and our uncles, they were gone during the week building their cable business and they'd be working out of town. Then they come home on the weekends. And my grandpa, you just heard all the businesses he was running. And then he had Bud's Country Corner, this grocery store, liquor store, pawn shop, motel. And he was busy all the time. But I can still remember every single day, like of my life growing up, he would come to our house and check on us and check on our moms. And just show up like every day while y'all were gone. And my Aunt Laura was like, and he was so busy and he had so much going on, but he always showed up at our houses and was like, babe, what can I do for you? And she said he was like a disciple of Jesus, like just the way that he was so just, he was so selfless and so giving and just so, I think that that's one of the most amazing qualities about him is it didn't matter how busy he was or how much he had going on. He served his family every single day of his life.
And, you know, that wasn't a burden to him. He, even the last year, I'd call to check in. If I was gone out of the country or somewhere, I'd call to check in and, the first thing he'd ask was, you need me to do anything for you? Would you need anything at the house? And you know, even at the end, he'd make sure somebody would go take care of that. But he got so much joy for doing things for other people. And that's maybe one of the lessons, biggest lessons that I got from him is I'm not sure if it was his upbringing that made him want to serve, or if he thought that he owed that to his family. But he, like Laura said, he checked in. He checked in. He never checked out because he did that until last year. If I had something, and a lot of times I would just say, "Yeah, go just make sure my pool cover's undone or something like that." He would hop on that Ranger and drive across the field and he'd go check on it. Or he raised this garden from hell, this 5-acre garden. He put up whiskey and he had all of these projects. We had COVID and he decided he had to feed everybody. So he would catch a 5-gallon bucket of crappie every day and he'd bring it to my brother Tim, that was a master fish skinner. At the end of the day, and there was no crappie too small that wouldn't go into that bucket, and he would clean the crappie and he'd bring crappie fillets to everybody. So it was that those things he did it with joy. He did it not because it was a responsibility. He did it because he actually got joy out of doing it.
Yeah. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Even though I live for the spring and the summer in the South, that means allergy season is also upon us. And I love being outside with my children as much as possible in our yard, but the allergies are definitely making it tough to enjoy every moment. Luckily for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This is a double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine with the best decongestant available. It relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy watery eyes, itchy nose, and throat, sinus congestion, and pressure with ease. I've been taking Claritin D this allergy season, and my allergies are so much better than they were last year. No more watery eyes or itchy throat. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? Well, it's time to get Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription for this medication. So you can go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Shout out to Crunch Labs for sponsoring this portion of the podcast. I don't know about y'all, but my kids love when things get sent to them in the mail. What is better to be sent to them than an educational, interactive subscription box? Crunch Labs is a STEM subscription where your kids get a really fun build-it-yourself toy in the mail. For the summer, Crunch Labs is hosting Camp Crunch Labs, where kids get 12 build-it-yourself toys, one shipped every week, which you know we need during the summer, plus access to exclusive Mark Rober videos and weekly challenges that are full of the juiciest engineering nuggets ever. Growing kids' brains all summer long. Camp Crunch Labs starts in June, so soon, and it will be packed with some amazing engineering nuggets for your children's brains. Plus, there are ongoing challenges that will be available as well. Their slogan is the least boring summer ever, and you will have just that with Crunch Labs. So think about this. How is this going to make your summer the best summer ever for you and your kids? Well, I know my children, and I know getting something in the mail that's going to help their brains that they get to build is going to be truly making them have the best summer ever. So go to crunchlabs.com/livingfully to sign your kids up for Camp Crunch Labs today. If you've been wanting to learn a new language because you're traveling abroad and you want to experience that country beyond just the touristy spots, then Rosetta Stone is for you. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on most devices like your desktop, phone, tablet, or you can really learn it anywhere. Rosetta Stone teaches you through immersion. Instead of memorizing and drilling vocabulary words, you learn by matching audio from native speakers to visuals. You read stories, you participate in dialogues, and other practical language skills to fast-track your ability to communicate fluently. They offer 25 languages from Spanish to French to Italian and German to Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and even Dutch, Arabic, and Polish. Rosetta Stone has been around for 30 years because it works. As you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words too, which is really helpful. It's also an amazing value. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Living Fully listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Visit www.rosettastone.com and use the code TODAY to redeem your 50% off. Again, use the code TODAY, T-O-D-A-Y, at rosettastone.com for 50% off. Trust me, you won't regret learning a new language. I like what you just said. He checked in, he didn't check out. I think that there's a major narrative, which, you know, I get it. Everybody's family's not like this. I always say, like, you can be the first generation of your family tree, like creating a family like this if you didn't have a family like this. But I feel that so many people, they want to create distance from their families. They want to create independence from their families. They don't, you know, and so many people, you know, grandparents are like, I don't want to bother them. They've got their own life. Like, I'll show up to the ball games or whatever, but I don't want to intrude or interfere. And I love that aspect of thinking about him like that. And I like it. You and Mom are really like that too. Like, you're just a part of our lives. You know, you're always just showing up and you just walk in the house and it's just amazing. And I like remembering, like, check in, don't check out. Because, like, family is everything, you know? And families have issues. Like, you know, our families had issues, but we always came back to family. We always came back to family. And, like, we'd rather be right with our family than, like, right about the thing. You just kept choosing your people over and over. But I love what you just said, like, how he just checked in all the time, you know, instead of checking out.
You know, and it's a tricky line to draw, is how much is too much. Can we be overbearing parents? Can we be overbearing grandparents? Yeah. And you know, that's your job to say you need to give us a little bit of space. And you know, that's the last thing we want to do. We love our grandkids and we want to be around them as much as we can. But you know, at night when it's time for, you know, y'all's routine. We need to get out of the way too. So
yeah, no, so I'd rather you stay and give them a bath.
Yeah,
I know. Well, right. I know. My mom's like, gosh, Kyle's gonna get tired of us coming over there. I'm like, he's the one that asks every time you're in town. Are your parents coming over tonight? Like, because he wants you to. Like, yeah. It's.
Well, and then I so appreciate being around them because they know who we are. They're truly. My grandkids are truly excited when they see us.
Oh, my gosh.
Sunday's starting
kidding?
To get that way.
Excited
with me.
Is not the word.
She was a little holdoffish.
Yeah.
Because she's usually in her mom's arms, and she doesn't want anybody else when she's there. But you know, it's I get the daughter-in-laws, the son-in-laws, you know, he's accepted those as family immediately, and that's part of. I don't think he ever thought he was better than another person.
No.
No matter how broke you are, he was broker. No matter how bad things have been for you, he's had worse things happen to him. So you know, it was something that you couldn't one up him on those type of things, and to see how he persevered through those situations. Was actually pretty remarkable, and it's kind of where I try to model myself and what I do after kind of what I saw him do in life.
I remember he used to always tell us, like, when be careful who you step on, or don't step on anybody going up the ladder because you're going to have to pass them again on your way back down.
Yeah.
you know, he was just so, and he was so like revered and admired in our community. You know, he'd know the governor and he'd know the senators, you know, but he'd also like, you know, the guy that just got out of prison, he'd be shaking his hand and talking to him at the table at Bud's Country Corner, eating a ham biscuit with him. Like, and that's how we were as kids. Like, we all worked at this little country store, and like, I mean, we were around the ex-felons and we were around the, you know, fancy people growing up. And he truly did. He was the exact same person also around all those people. He was just like who he was, and everybody loved him equally.
When you look at it, kind of when he finally passed away, we were talking about his best friends, and it was most eclectic group of guys. It was guys, most of them were in their 30s that were drawn to him, that were, a neighbor of ours and that always, you know, would help Dad, and he'd be the first one over there with a tractor to fix or something like that. And then when he was in his last days, the people that came to the house to visit him, you can tell, you know, that the friendships he had, it didn't matter age, or maybe he was older than most, and most of the guys that his age were gone already, but his friends and his relationships and the people that he impacted were a bunch of young people that really got something out of that.
Yeah, the last day that, like, Jade and I were around him, and I told this story in my keynote about how he was just like the ultimate entrepreneur to young people, you know, giving all this advice and telling him, he kept telling me all these ideas. He'd be like, Mal, I got another idea. And he'd tell me these ideas, and he kept being like telling me all these ideas. And he said, that's when he said to me, he's like, I got so many ideas, but I just don't have any more time. And I was like, gosh, to, you know, just be that alive until the very end. And a lot of his ideas and his advice were really good ideas too. Mm-hmm. Like, but we were there, and like Jim and Linda Baird, they have a big, you know, meat business in our hometown that's garnered a lot of success, and they're just really good people. And we were all there together at the same time, and Jimbo like pulled me aside, and he's like, man, you don't know what this man means to me. And like everybody said that about him, you know, he took such joy in helping other people in their business, and he didn't ask for anything in return, you know, just like helping, serving people all his life. That was just so powerful.
Well, same thing with his daughter-in-laws. He did it to every, you know, he was such a great retailer when he worked the grocery store. And people didn't come to the grocery store to buy the sandwiches that Mom made. They came to the grocery store to talk to him and Mom. Mom would make sure they paid their bills on the way out the door. But that's what drew it. He always had a story. He always had a conversation. He always had advice for somebody. And, you know, he was almost like a counselor, too. People, when they had trouble, would come to him, what should I do about this, bud? And he'd always have an opinion on things. So that's helpful when people reach out to you thinking that what can you do to help me?
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of like, what can you do for me? He always thought like, what can I do for you? You know? Okay. What, how do you feel he was different as a parent than he is as a grandparent? Because obviously I didn't see him as a parent to you guys growing up. But I certainly saw him as a grandparent, and that he was second to none. He was the best on earth. Mm-hmm. And just so present and there and joy filled for us every day. And, you know, he'd have projects for us too. Like Max and I, we were the oldest two. I was the oldest girl. Max was the oldest boy. He had us plant a 2-acre pumpkin patch. And then not only did he plant it with us, but then he'd harvest it with us. And then we'd take it on a trailer and sell it in the parking lot of Walmart. And then we'd get kicked out of Walmart because we didn't have a permit to sell our pumpkins. Then he'd bribe the sheriff with something he'd made in his back barn. He just like... He was such an intentional grandparent, and, you know, we were all in those gardens together and all, like, it's just, the list goes on and on of the things that we just did alongside him. But how do you feel he was, do you feel like it's different being a parent and a grandparent? You and I have talked about that mm-hmm. a little bit. Yeah, what do you feel like the differences in a parent and a grandparent are? Or, you know, how was he different as a parent and grandparent, but also just the differences in general?
So, you know, the kind of what you described was a grandparent, and kind of similar, but kind of like with me and your relationship, it was education, discipline, you know, we had to give love, we had to care about you and your well-being, but as a grandparent, all we got to do is love our grandkids. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is educational parts of that, but it's more lessons learned. You got to go up there, take a shower right now, and you got to eat mm-hmm. your green beans and stuff like a parent has to do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sometimes a tough part. And you know, the funny part about it is that was kind of my mom's job was the disciplinarian.
Yeah.
Dad's job was let's go shoot some rabbits and cook them for dinner. You know, it was something that we would do to be fun. And mom's job was we got to be dressed up for church on time. We got to be at school.
Yep.
We got one car, and that drives us to school in the morning and picks us up in the evening.
Yeah.
And that was the schedule. And the difference between a parent and a grandparent. When he was a grandparent, he was more let's experience how it is to raise pumpkins, and so he taught you about farming. Let's teach you how to hustle, and let's take these pumpkins and show them how to turn them into money, and mm-hmm. and you know, and then let's see how we deal with adversity when you had a trailer load of pumpkins. and Walmart,
the sheriff comes along,
called the sheriff, and they said, "You can't sell pumpkins in the Walmart parking lot. They're selling them in the store." And he said, "Go tell them that." So y'all ended up getting to sell the rest of your pumpkins. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's kind of an example of how the lessons and kind of how they're just different from a grandparent. You know, my grandkids, when they come home, we're going to cut wood. We're going to build a bonfire. We're going to do dangerous things. We're going to ride four wheelers 100 miles an hour, and we're you know, things like that. Instead of you know, you've got to do your homework, you've got to do this, and that's kind of the difference. And you know, everybody says being a grandparent's way more fun than being a parent, and you know, doing the hard things as a parent are necessary, but you don't have to do those as a grandparent, and it's so much more fun doing the fun things with them, and teaching them things by doing the fun things like the pumpkin patch.
Yeah, it's less pressure because, like, you know, you've raised your kids well, and like they're instilling the things they need to, so it's like the pressure's off, so you get to enjoy them. I think that's awesome. Okay, so we've talked about this already, but like, how home base was always family for him. So even like he lived in Louisiana, he was doing well at the grocery store, but they always wanted to get back to family, like just always family. Family was home base. And I think that, you know, that's obviously lived for generations because I even practiced that in my own life, but, you know, no matter what happened, no matter what business failed, like, he just always came back to the family and made it work for the family. And when I start worrying about something that I'm doing in my own life, I, like, try to check myself with the reality of things. And I always am worried that, like, I'm working too much, like, away from my kids, even though essentially I'm around my kids 10 times more than the majority of a working parent, because they're around a lot of times. And when I think of, like, Pawpaw, who worked all the time, constantly, and, like, how amazing and dynamic he still was, it makes me breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief that, like, your kids don't, you know, they don't remember you being gone all the time or working. Like, they remember that time with you and the way that you made them feel and the attention. Like, that's the same with Pawpaw. I mean, there were so many people that showed up at the end of his life that knew him, like, barely at all, but they were like, he's the most influential person in my life. It's like a, you know, a quality over quantity thing, I guess.
And you know, the amazing things about working and having your kids involved while you work is they do pick up stuff like that. They do understand that you know, that's part of life, you know, mm-hmm. earning a living and work and having a job. That's part of adult life. And that's I know that I picked up a lot on Dad's businesses, even from Louisiana. I remember he was 27, so I was probably six or so. And mm-hmm. I remember kind of working in that grocery store. And so I remember farming when we moved back, driving a tractor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I remember when we sold the crops and we sold the livestock that we didn't make money off of it. And what did we do wrong? Mm-hmm. So those are lessons kind of, you know, and with your business and having kids around your business, it's kind of lessons that they pick up on too. So,
yeah.
So you got to kind of be intentional about how that works also.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I need to think about, like, the good in that versus the bad. I think that's just, like, especially moms, I feel like innately, like, you just feel that, like, it's never enough, or it's never enough time, or you should sacrifice everything that you know, every single bit of time that you have. But there's so much richness that comes from your kids seeing you also, like, hustling and earning a living and working. I mean, I remember that about Pawpaw growing up.
And just like Lisa, you know, I was gone Monday through Friday, and she had four kids at home on a farm. And other than Dad coming by in the morning checking, do you need anything, she had four kids in one vehicle. And, you know, part of the time she would drive, load up all four kids, take you to school, and then you and Jade to school, and then bring them back home. And when we moved to the farm, she had no babysitter. Mm-hmm. It was either Dad would come by for an hour while she would run somebody to town, or
yes.
or he would say, well, let me just run them, drop them off for you. So that's kind of, you know, the mom when Dad was out working, and it seems like it takes two to raise a family like mm-hmm. that.
He also, you know, obviously his life had a lot of good and bad in it. But what I love about him too is he wasn't just a grandparent that was there during all the good times. And you said this when we were talking about this. He's like, you said he was there at Miss America when you competed, but he was also there at your family day at the treatment center, you know, mm-hmm. that you had to go to. So, like, he really did. He showed up for you, like, no matter the case, no matter the state that you were in. And he was just as proud of us when the boys were winning wrestling matches or when I was doing Miss America as he was anything, even just, like, the regular things in life, or when we made a mistake and we picked ourselves back up. And that's something, too, that I've learned from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we, you know, he was, we never hid anything from him, good or bad, and he never hid anything from us either. So he supported us unconditionally until the day he died.
Yeah. So, you know, something that I want to kind of, like, talk about here at the end as we're reflecting on, like, my grandpa is, you know, the things that we're talking about today about this incredible man and all of the things that, all the lives he changed and, like, this just dynamic human being that he was, is we have so much information and his stories recorded and his pictures and his stories that have been passed down for years and years, because you, about 20 years were like ago, were really intentional about being like, our family story needs to be told. I remember first we did it in slideshows. So we'd go through Grandma and Papa's pictures and we put together this slideshow about our family story. And it was like Grandma and Papa, how they met, you know, where everybody was born, all of his business ventures. And we would sit as a family at least once a year and we would watch this presentation about like our family legacy. And looking back on that, I think that's such a cool thing that we did that. Mm-hmm. And it's a very rare thing, I feel like, to do, because so many families, they think that just living alongside someone that everybody just remembers and they're, but you, there needs to be some more intentionality, I think, to sharing your legacy, which is what we did with our video project with Pawpaw. And if you guys watch the YouTube video of the podcast, like, we're going to have a lot of like these extra clips to show examples of what we did. But we did this video because, I mean, we knew Grandma and Pawpaw were dynamic, but we also knew, like, the reality is my kids won't really remember them or know them as well. And so we wanted to capture them telling their own stories, answering questions on video, like, you know, in their element. So we did this family legacy project where we, each family submitted about 10 questions. They could be questions like, what makes you smile, like we talked about a while ago, or how did you and Grandma meet, or what's the best advice you have for the next generation, or what was your biggest business failure, and like, how did you come back from it? You know, they, all these questions. And not only have we captured their spirit as they answer these questions, and we have these videos for years to come to show, like, generations and generations, but like, it also, it shows your family members too that you really care about all the things they went through, and that you care about your family and like your family story. And I think that it's an important thing to talk about on the podcast, because I think as people kind of grow further and further away from their families and their family stories, it's like, I just want to encourage you. Everybody's got an iPhone now in their back pocket. Like, when you're home for Christmas, or like if you're around a great aunt that you love or a grandparent, ask them 5 questions and say, hey, I'm going to record you answering these questions just so like I have them. You know, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that, because we were talking about, because
that's one of our probably biggest treasures. And it was 20 years ago, almost 15 years ago, that we did this. And and like you said, it doesn't have to be much. And kind of what started it was, a coworker of mine, we were talking about, you know, we were going to try to do it. Mal's going to ask the questions. We're going to video it. And we had a decent videographer, but, you know, I was griping about the cost of doing this. And she told me their mom passed away when she was a young girl. And she said, you know, I would pay that much money to hear an audio recording of my mom saying my name. And, you know, to look forward at that, what our grandkids are going to see is our parents telling their stories and, mm-hmm. and seeing them laugh and seeing them, you know, how they met each other, and hear my mom talk about him calling his girlfriend when she was a switchboard operator. You know, those are stories that we had heard verbally, and it was our job to kind of repeat them and maybe get them right. But that video project 15, 20 years ago is going to be there for our great-grandkids that aren't even born yet to see and know who their great-granddad was. So,
yeah.
So, and like you said, it doesn't have to be an elaborate production. iPhones are probably as good a quality as what that camera was 15 years ago, and just capture it and save it somewhere, because it's going to be a treasure 15 years from now.
Yeah, it's going to be the ultimate treasure. You know, I talked about this, and just to kind of wrap it up, you know, I could go on and on about just the way that he was and all of his amazing stories, and we'll put some of that in that bonus video. But if I had to pick like the three things like that I learned from him that I bring into my own life that I thought were just so dynamic. We've already talked about them, but I just want to reiterate them. Then I want to know what yours are. One was just how he made it through adversity and was so joy-filled on the other side. That specific second part too is so amazing to me. So I think that is a big one for me. And then I already talked about it earlier, but just how special he made people feel. He always noticed people. He looked them in the eye when he talked to them. He remembered their names. He asked about their families. He asked what he could do for them. He was just the ultimate, like, server of other people. And, like, he made people feel so special. And he called out the things that you were good at, and he made you feel good about them. And he did it with all of us, with the grandkids. I mean, it's one of the reasons that I leaned into singing so much was he was just he was there to encourage it every step of the way, taking me to voice lessons every week, but then also going with me to Houston, making the CD, then let me sell them at Bud's Country Corner to the coal miners and the farmers. Those things were just two of my favorite things about him, and like the things that I admired the most. What would you say, like, were some of the things that you admired the most in him that you carry into your life?
You know, and I guess probably one of the things is I don't think he ever judged anybody by the amount of money they had, by what kind of car they drove. Like I said, he grew up broke, and maybe his risk taking behavior was he wasn't afraid to be broke again. So yeah. That's part of it. He instilled in all of us to work hard, be good human beings. He would have been proud of us no matter probably what we did. He probably laughed at some of our failures more than our mom did, but he didn't discourage us when we did make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So, not judging people was one of them, and then just the unconditional love that he gave just to everybody, strangers, friends. You know, he would everybody that walked in. We have this big wrestling camp every year, and the Nashville coaches come in, and a lot of them during the camp will hang out over with Dad. And one of them told my brother Robert, he said, "That's the coolest old man that I've ever met." So he had a draw to him where people wanted to be around him and wanted to hear what he had to say. So, most of the times it wasn't very important. Most of the times it was probably funny. But he always had something clever to say. So, those are two things. His sense of humor, his caring for other people, and his non-judgmental attitude, I guess, would be the three things
that's
I would
awesome.
Throw out.
Yeah, that's all three very true. Moving forward, like, I'm still a little bit, I'm nervous about going home the next time, because since his funeral, like, it's gonna be the first time, like, going home, and it's just like, I try not to focus on, like, this, what's missing, and, like, this whole kind of in our family, but more so just, like, what he was to our family. Like, it's what a great thing to miss someone and to love someone so much that you just wanted them to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the day he died, he just had people, throngs of people just in and out the door just wanting to see him. Then he had 400 people standing out in a field because he didn't want a real funeral. So he wanted to have it out in our field in the freezing cold weather. And you just had people from far and wide, old and young and rich and not wealthy, like standing there in that field, like celebrating the life of this incredible person that we just were so lucky to have, But is there anything else, like, that you want to say about him or reflection?
There are just tons that we got to say. I hope we told enough about it. Like I said, your talk was very focused, but there's so much probably that we there's probably more that we haven't said than what we have.
Yeah.
In talking about missing him, it's every day. The time when I check in was either in my car driving home, and there were times that I knew that he'd be around the house because during the day he was gone. He was fishing or he was making whiskey or he's gardening. He even retired, he was gone from daylight till dark, and And then I knew he was always around in the evening. So on my ride home to the house, I'd call and I'd check in. I'd check in. What are you up to? What did you do today? And I miss that. I miss and you know, like you said, I saw the gravesite since the funeral the first time last week. The first time I drove up there and looked at it. So you know, it's a hole that will be filled in as long as we keep remembering the positive parts and what he taught us. And knowing that he survived and was able to be joyful even after bad things happen. And, you know, even after we lose him, we've got to search every day for that joy. And we got to learn how to laugh like he did. What makes us smile? We got to remember that. So
yeah. So
that's kind of where I leave it. And that's how I deal with missing him. It may get easier. But I still, you know, now I call grandma. I say, what are you doing? And she usually was the one to answer the phone when she could find it. I would check in with her. So that's kind of replaced in the hole that where I miss him. I still have her there at the house.
Yeah. And she's doing great. I feel like grandma's just... I mean, to be married to someone for how long were they married?
I'm 66, 67 years.
67 years. To be married to someone for 67 years and to lose them, like, what a shift in your, the ultimate shift in your life. And, like, I'm proud of her because she is still joy-filled and, like, carrying his legacy on.
23 grandkids. He's got a lot to celebrate.
And 23 great-grandkids. Mm. Yep. And many more to come, I'm sure. But you know, like we said in the beginning of the podcast, my grandpa was the oldest. My dad is the oldest. I'm the oldest. Let's just do a podcast where we talk about him, just so that we can share his legacy with other people. Because if you can change one thing in your life from something that you heard about his story, that's just another person that he touched that he didn't even meet. So thanks for doing this with me, because I know it's not easy to talk about. This was the least that I've cried talking about it.
I got through it pretty good.
Yeah, we did good. So, well, thank you.
Yeah,
for thanks coming on.
I hope we stood up to what the last one that you did. I said I was in a just got internet access, and I was in the middle of a. Like a Delta crown room, and I started crying like a baby in there. They said, "Has he had too much to drink or something?"
That's sweet.
But I hope we tell the story and do him justice.
Yeah. Yep. That keynote was a surprise to me too, because we changed the direction of that like the week of the keynote, and I was like, "I want to talk about my grandpa," and everybody was like, even like Madison that was like helping me with everything that's on my team that knows me very well was like, "Are you sure you're ready for this?" And I was like, yeah, like, because every time I would like be talking about what I want to talk about to them, I was bawling, crying the whole time. They're looking at me like, "Are you sure you want to do this for 260,000 people?" But like, you know, you get strength in the moment. I just glad any opportunity to share his legacy and to help bring some of his life and his spirit into other people's lives. Like, I'm going to take it, even if I bumble through it a little bit. So thank you guys for listening to this podcast and for letting my dad and I reflect on the greatest man on earth, my grandpa, Papa Bud. If you watch the YouTube video, you'll see that extra content that we were talking about. And I just want to encourage you one more time, if you have a grandparent or a parent or someone that's important to you that's still living, to make it a point to write some questions down, get your iPhone out and record them telling your family story. Ask them those questions, and that piece of content, that little tiny video that you film, is going to be something that you treasure and cherish for years and years to come. So I want to encourage you to do that. And even though it may feel a little awkward and a little hard and you're like, "Oh my gosh, my grandpa is not going to want to do that at Christmas," I assure you that they will want to do that. And they love sharing their story. And it's something that we'll treasure forever. And it's worth its weight in gold and more. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Living Fully podcast. If you like this episode, share on social media the piece that you liked. and that resonated with you, and leave us a review. We always appreciate that over here on the podcast, and it helps other people to find our show. Thank you so much for tuning in, and tune in next week for another episode. Hey friend, if you're loving the show, I'd love to hear from you. Head to your podcast app, scroll down to where it says ratings and reviews, and share your thoughts well with a rating and review. Your words might be just what the next person needs to tune in and start living fully today.